So continuing on our study of the book of Revelation. Now, we all know now, we've been moving on. We found ourselves now at this major transition in the book, moving from chapter 3 to chapter 4, but we're taking sort of a filler, I guess, to put in there to try to understand what this concept of the church is. And so we've been looking at this, and we understand now from the Old Testament and from many times of looking at this that the Old Testament was very clear on many things of Christ, but it never really talked about the church. Paul revealed to us that he was the one that the Lord would use to reveal this quote-unquote mystery of what it means to be this thing called the church. Now, it's important that we understand before we move on here this morning as we move forward in this study just what the church is. We always talk about this building, and we often talk and use the phrases as we talk to one another, you know, about the building being the church. The building is not the church. It's a building, okay? We are the church. This is just the place where the church meets. So we need to make sure that we understand that when we use this term or this word, church, what we're talking about, it literally means the assembled or called out ones, those that are the congregation. You could use that word as well, but it's dealing with specifically the Lord's people as they're called out. The places where those people meet are the buildings, and we have switched it to mean the church. So when you talk about going to church, it's not about going to a building. It's about going to be involved with other people that are part of that body. And we're going to look at that, at the fellowship, which is Christ. And that's why when Trav was doing the announcements this morning, and he was talking about all the stuff that we have going during the week, we're not doing that because we're obligated or doing it. We're doing it because we need each other. When we pray tonight, this evening, we need you to pray. Even if you can't be here physically, be with us in spirit and pray. We're praying for stuff not just in our own families and the relationships that we know, but we're praying for things all over this world. And so, you know, so we have that time set aside where God's people can come together and collectively lift our voices unto the throne of God, where we find grace, as the book of Hebrews tells us. It's why we have women's fellowships and men's fellowships. It's why we do that, to learn to be, again, the kind of people that God wants us to be. And we just heard from the ladies how significant that is, and how especially the senior ladies. I'll use senior ladies because it just sounds better. People like Ginger on up. In case you don't know, Ginger is senior to Priscilla. But anyways, and that fact. She's going to kill me. You know, did you notice, Dave, that I knew she wasn't in here because I saw her Sunday school shirt, and I'm like, I'm going to do this because she ain't going to be in here. But anyway, but it's really significant. Travis read the passages. Folks, do you understand the significance when Paul writes this to Titus? Titus is a young pastor. He's a minister of a fellowship, and he's young, and he doesn't understand. And Paul writes to him and says, listen, man, these things are significant. The men, the older men, they need to take the younger men. We live in a world today where it's the younger men or the younger ladies, where these people don't have anything that they can latch on to. This is a very different world, seniors, than it was when we grew up, in case you're not paying attention. It's not the same. So our life experience, our wisdom, our maturity, we need to pass those things on. And as we meet together with these younger fellas, and younger fellas, you need to come and hang out with the older fellas too. It ain't just the older guys. I mean, that's the way that it works. That's why we provide these things. It's why we minister to our youth and our junior high and our children, all the way down to the ones that are in that one room. I could do pretty much any ministry in this church except nursery. I would not be a fan of being in there. But that's why we do this. That's the body of Christ. It's the fellowship of believers who know that they have far to go in their lives, but learn from one another. And as we learn, we pass that on so it can be passed on, you know, on down the line. And that's why we do all of this. That's what the church is. And it's nice if you have a big building to meet in, but there are churches all over this world that don't have this. For those of you that have been with us for a long, long time, when we first initiated our ministry with Luke and Kristen, this was long before Steph and Sherry went there, and Juan and I made that first trip there. We went out to Benguera, the island there, where those there's that isolated portion of the Shitzwa, the tribal group that we work with there. And we went out to that island, and we were meeting with the group of believers. There were some 15 or 20 of them. And as we were there, we were meeting around this tree. I've shared this story in the past. And they would come up to us, and of course, we're rich Americans from their perspective, and that's true. But they had come up to us, and they were asking, and they said, help us, you know, would you help us build a church? And my reply to them was, you don't need a building to be the church. This is the church. This tree is a wonderful place for the people of God to meet. I mean, it completely changes your perspective when you understand that. Buildings are nice, but they're not that important. We could meet over there and be just as effective in our work for the ministry of the Lord as this building is providing for us. Now, it's pretty nice, I have to admit, and it's going to be even nicer. Just wait. But that's so we need to make sure that we understand these things when we're talking about them, what we're really talking about. As the leadership, as the pastor of the church, I'm concerned with you as an individual believer of the church. Again, why we make these provisions for you to grow in your faith. And besides that, one of the coolest thing, and ladies, correct me if I'm wrong, but the guys know this already. The best thing for me when we go to these men's conferences or anything like that, I mean, the teaching is great, don't get me wrong, but you know what the coolest part is? Hanging out with the boys, man, and doing guy things. We talk about chicks, we talk about cars, we do guy things. I love that. Being together and just being out and hanging out and just laughing and talking together. It's wonderful. And I'm sure that the ladies did that too. That is what makes those times special to me. Of course, the icing on the cake is the teaching, but it's the fellowship, man. The journey back and forth and the lunches. Of course, you know, meals are really important to me, especially when someone else buys. But those are the good things about that. Again, you see, that's all the concept when we use this word church that we're talking about. So as we've been looking at this, we've been setting the stage, and we understand now that not only is there this transition in Revelation, but that we understand now from the Word of God that God's view of the world is threefold. There are three entities, for lack of a better word to use, that God works with. And he looks at each of them differently and ministers to each of them differently, the same as any father or mother would to the multiple children. They're different kids. And the three entities were the Jew and the Gentile. In other words, the Jew and the non-Jew. But in the book of Acts, and with the new revelation, there was a third entity that was brought in, and it is called the Ecclesia. Iglesia for the Spanish. It's the church. It's the fellowship of believers. And that fellowship of believers is made up of Jew and Gentile, right? So that's what we've been talking about. So we said now, when we understand that, that when you look at the way God works in and through the church, it's very different than the way he works with the Jews. It still is, and it always will be. They have a special role to play, as does the church. And the Gentiles are invited to become a part of the church. That's the whole point of evangelism. So we could go on and on, but I think you get the idea. So when we understand this, what we said we're going to do, we're going to look at each of those three groups as they pertain in the book of Revelation, but we're going to start with the church because that's where we find ourselves within the context of the book of Revelation. And so we've talked about, and we'll actually begin this morning, looking at the nature and the destiny of the church, then later the Jews, and of course the Gentiles, but for now, the nature of the church. And then we're going to look at its destiny. So to understand the nature of the church from God's perspective, as it is outlined for us in the scripture, there are multiple ways that God talks about the church. We're just going to look at three of them because they're the big three B's, if you'd like. We're going to look, first of all, at the building of God. That's what the church, God's people are called. They're called the building of God. They're also called the body of Christ. And we're also called the bride of Christ. So the building, the body, and the bride. Okay? We're going to end with the bride because that's going to move us into chapter 4. because from my studies, I just love that aspect. So we're going to take some time to get there. So that's what we're going to look at, the first of the nature concerning the church, and that is, first of all, as it pertains to us being called the building of God. Now, this is a huge study in and of itself, trust me, okay? If we were to really do an exhaustive study on what it means to be the building of God, our first aspect in the nature of the church, it would take us months and months to complete. Because the building of God, just that phrase as it applies to you and I as the church, is enormous. And it has meaning, not just in the here and the now, but even in the life that is to come, as well as the future for where things are headed. So we're not going to be able to do this justice, as it were. We're going to be able to touch on these things, to get a look at them, to get a basic understanding of them, because to do it otherwise, you know, we would still be here when my grandson is old enough to teach. And so we're just not going to be able to do that. So if you're familiar with this, bear with me. We're just going to do sort of a superficial view of it, but enough, hopefully, that you'll get an understanding, because where I really want to spend the time is on the bride of Christ. That's where we're really going to spend some time in that. Not months, but probably a few weeks, because to me, that teaching is just hugely significant, and it explains so much of what Jesus taught and what he said and the way the apostles would have interpreted what he was saying. So the building of God is the first thing that we're going to look at. Now, notice what Paul says here, and in 1 Corinthians chapter 3, and we're going to read through the rest of the verses. Notice what he says. My thing here is shifted again, and I cannot read it. That's better. That'll work. Okay. For we are God's, notice, fellow workers. Okay, we're going to come back and break this down, so I'm just going to read this through. For we are God's fellow workers. You were God's field. You are God's building. According to the grace of God, which was given to me as a wise master builder, I have laid the foundation, and another builds on it. But let each one take heed to how he builds on it, for no other foundation can anyone lay than that which is laid. In other words, it's already there, which is Jesus Christ. Now, it's obvious that Paul is communicating here to the church at Corinth. Now, let me say something I know many of you are familiar with. Remember, when we say 1 Corinthians, what we're talking about is a literal letter, we still have it, that Paul wrote to a church that was in a place called Corinth. That's why it's called an epistle. It literally means letter. And like all of the other churches, the leadership was having difficulty, and there was much going on in their fellowship that they didn't understand. So they sent a letter to Paul, because he was the one that planted the church, right? Trained the leaders, and then left them to lead. He didn't stay there and keep his hands in the cookie dough. He said, this church belongs to the Lord, so you guys have got to take this. Well, situations arose within the church. There was all sorts of problems, in particular the church at Corinth. And so the leadership wrote to Paul and said, what about this? What about this? What do we do about this? Paul responds by writing, actually, there's four letters. We have two of them recorded for us. And one of those is called 1 Corinthians. So when we're reading Paul's words in 1 Corinthians, we're reading Paul's response to a request because of a problem or a situation that was going on. Obviously, based on this and the verses that come before it, there was confusion about what was taking place there in the church. Paul had been there. We already talked about it. He had planted the church. Corinth, by the way, is in what we would know today as modern-day Greece. And he had planted that church. He had, like I said, he had shepherded it. He had watched and started the home Bible studies, the typical thing that Paul always did. And he had ministered to these people, and he had watched, and he had listened, and he had prayed, and he had waited on the Lord to raise up the leaders. And so he was a huge part of this. Later on, he sent somebody in his absence, and a fellow by the name of Apollos, that would go and would help them as another mature believer that would come alongside. But what had happened was that all of a sudden there was problems within the fellowship at Corinth. Imagine that. How can that be in the church? Because the church is made of people. That's why there's problems. And as long as the church is made up of people, there will always be problems. Get over it. It's like anything else in this life. If you got two people, there you're going to have two opinions, no matter what you say or do. It's the way that it is. So these guys, they got to a juncture in their ministry there in Corinth where they started having disagreements. We don't really know ultimately, probably some of the rest of the letter, but we're not really told what brought it to this head. But what had happened was there started to be a division within the fellowship. And there were people that said, well, we were here when Paul was here, and this is what Paul would have said. And the others were saying, well, we don't agree with that because we were here, we came along with Apollos. And we really think that Apollos is the one. I mean, after all, Paul gave him the leadership role. So we're going to follow Apollos. And then you had one group saying, well, we're going to follow Paul. No, we're going to follow Apollos. And so the leadership writes to him and they said, Paul, what do we do about this? Paul's response, 1 Corinthians chapter 3. What is this you're talking about? Does the church belong to me? Paul would say, no, it doesn't belong. Does it belong to Apollos? No, it doesn't belong to Apollos. It's the Lord's church. So what are you talking about? Well, I follow Paul. I follow Apollos. I mean, that doesn't even make sense. Nobody is supposed to follow anyone else. If you're coming here because of me, then you're coming for the wrong reasons. This has nothing to do with me. Never has, never will. And that's what was happening in that church. And so Paul writes these. And he goes on and he's talking about this thing. No, look, I planted, Apollos watered, but it's God that makes the dang thing grow. Yeah, we did the work that we were given to do, but it's God that is the one where life comes from. It has nothing to do with either of us. So what is this? I'm of Apollos, I'm of Paul. And this is not a new problem. We have churches in our town. We have people that have left this fellowship for these same reasons. Because somebody said, or somebody did. Wah, 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 wah. I don't know why people cannot remember the 11th commandment. Thou shalt not snivel. Stop your dang sniveling. So what? Somebody said something. I feel bad for you. No. Get over it. Go to him face to face and say, you know what, man, that really bothered me and I don't appreciate you talking like that. Wouldn't you respect someone better than that than saying, well, I'm going to leave because I don't like what they said or he said or she said? I mean, come on. Are we still in junior high? What's the deal here? It just drives me sneaking crazy. And then you look at the history of the church. Oh, well, we've got Calvinists and we've got Arminianists. Well, I follow Calvin. Well, I follow Arminius. I won't get into Calvinism, Arminianism. Trust me. Don't even worry about it. Don't even worry about it. You listen to what God says. Trust me. When you stand before God, and you will, he's not going to ask you if you were Calvinist or an Arminianist. He's not going to ask if you were covenant or dispensational theologian. He's not going to ask if you were pre-trib, post-trib, or mid-trib. He's not going to worry about those things. He's going to say, I sent my son Jesus Christ to give his life for you, and he showed you how to live by giving you my spirit. What did you do with that? That's what you're going to have to answer for. So all throughout the church's history, it's what divided the Jews from the Gentiles and created huge problems. Wait till we get over into that section. We're really going to see what's going on there. The problem that exists in this misunderstanding of quote-unquote Judaism and Christianity was created by us, people like us, though a couple, you know, several centuries ago. And we just bit into it and we still have the problems. It's ridiculous. Absolutely ridiculous. So, this idea of being separate, this is Paul's response. So when you read that, for we are God's fellow workers, the we there is Paul and Apollos. We work together on this, guys. There wasn't a group after Paul, the red shirts, and a group after Apollos, the blue shirts. There wasn't. God is not impressed with Calvary Chapel any more than he's impressed with the Southern Baptist Convention or the Methodists or the Presbyterians, and the list goes on and on. He doesn't care. This is the only thing that matters. Well, but your belief on that is what defines that. Well, it shouldn't, right? I mean, let's be honest. So, For we are God's fellow workers. That is me and Apollos. We're working together. And why are we working together? Because you are God's field. Remember the watering and the planting? Paul said, we did our job. We're doing our job. Stop worrying about. You know, it's just as important to plant as it is to water. I mean, if you plant something and you don't put any water on it, then it doesn't grow. And it doesn't make a whole lot of sense to water something that hasn't been planted. It isn't going to grow. You could stand in here day after day, hour after hour, and water the cement. Newsflash, it's not going to grow. Because there's nothing there to grow. So how do you divide the importance or the significance of the two up? You can't. One is just as significant. Evangelism is planting. Discipleship is watering. But it's God that gives the increase. We're fellow workers, and you are God's field. You're the reason that all this has happened. You are God's building. Notice how he moves from agriculture into whatever that, you know, whatever buildings are. I don't even know. Architecture, I guess. Agriculture to architecture. There you go. You are God's building. I mean, that's really clear. So how did all of this happen? The fact of that you're God's building means that he's building it. He's building it. He's using us to do the work, but he's the one that's building it. Well, how is he building it? Is he like many of the places where we minister, and these kids from Uganda, some of you that were here, you saw the video, you've seen videos from the other places that we've gone all over the world and done the ministry and stuff. And in many of these places, there's no inspectors. They don't got to worry about a red note stuck to their walls. Trust me. There's wires, if there is electricity at all, there's wires hanging everywhere. I mean, we're talking coming off of power lines. Kids swinging on them. It's insane. I mean, as an American, you walk around and you just go, this would never pass inspection. No, it wouldn't. But there, you see, there's no structure to it. You build based on the need. That's why they have dirt floors. It doesn't make sense to not have a dirt floor when you live in those conditions. Why would you want another kind of floor that you can't take care of? You don't even have water, man. So dirt seems to work pretty well. And you put up thatch. You don't have materials available to you, so you use what nature provides. Well, there's wood in the bush. There's palm trees that make these really cool things that make really nice roofs. It's amazing to watch what these people can do. When we lived in Belize, it was amazing. That's a couple times I was lucky enough to get asked to go, and for Pastor Felice, I'll just use him as the example, was asked to go to his village in Big Falls and to help them because they were rethatching his roof, the roof of his house. And, you know, it was a typical dirt floor, you know, wood, nasty, you know, what we would call nasty looking wood, all warped and holes looking right through it. You don't want to change underwear in there, trust me. Okay, not a lot of privacy. But anyways, so they've taken all the old thatch off, and it's from the cahoon tree, and they brought, you know, they had been days and days, him and the people in the village, and they had gone out because it was his turn, and they had cut all these palm fronds, and they drug them all back through the bush. We're talking miles. Man, folks, these people work. They work because it's survival. But what they do is they take these things and they split them down the middle, and then they have a group of guys that get together, and I mean, we're talking thousands of these things. And then they take them, they lay them together, and they rope them, and the leaves are shaped in such a way that they're sort of a cup. So you have to put the cup, make sure the cup is up. So when it rains, and they live in the rainforest, so they get rain, that the water doesn't get through. And then you stack like seven or eight of them together, right? So we were over there doing all of this stuff, and I'm watching all of this, and it was just this incredible thing. Well, now it's time to start putting the thatch up onto the house. And of course, we're talking, you know, Mayas, you know, the people, if you've been there, you know what I'm talking about. These people are our Marie and I's family, Trav and them. You know, they're little tiny people. I mean, they're like this big. I'm like this giant. And they have no problem saying, oh, Pastor Rick, you're so fat. Yeah. Yeah. First time I heard that, I said, come here, you little dweeb, I'll show you fat. But what they mean is, hell, you look healthy. I mean, you look big. Now, granted, I am fat. I'm not saying that. But the point is, that's how they view things. So we're over there, and all of a sudden, so all these little guys, these little short little folks, they all start climbing up on top of this thing. And it's amazing to watch these people. I mean, it's amazing. Oh, those are their safety lanyards. You don't have to worry about OSHA showing up. So these guys, they shimmy up this thing, and they're climbing all over this. And there's these little skinny people, and it's like you start handing up the thatch, and they take it and they put it down, you know, and they layer it in a certain way, and it ends up being about this thick. It's really, really cool to watch. But after a while of chucking these things up, I said to Felice, I said, I'd like to get up there and learn how to do that. And he's like, oh no, Pastor. Oh no, we can't let you up on the roof. And I said, why? I said, I won't fall, and even if I do, I won't sue. He goes, oh, no, no, you're too big. You can't get up there. So I had to do my part in building. It's like, oh, I got to chuck these stupid things up there. So the next time I was asked to go to do a thatch roof, I said, do I get to put the roof on, or do I have to chuck the thatch? Because I'm not going if I have to chuck the thatch. No, I didn't. But anyway, that's what we're talking about. God's building. There's no rules when you're in a place like Belize or in Mozambique. There's no rules. You just build. Here we have rules. We understand this. The very fact that he said you are God's building immediately says to us there's a plan. Because God doesn't just throw things up. He's an architect. He's, this whole thing is laid out based on how he views the world. Paul's later, as we read, I'm a master builder, but I'm not the architect. God's the architect. So the very fact that we're God's building implies that we, as a result of being this building that God himself is putting together, using people like Paul and all down through the ages, using people like me and the leaders of this church and all of the other churches, that's we're the builders, but we are not the architect. We have the plans. And believe it or not, they've been approved. They're right here. This is the plans for what we build. It's as simple as that. It's not my plans, not anyone else's plans. It's God's plans. You don't have to pay money to get the plans approved. They are approved. So God, you are God's building. According to the grace of God, which is given to me as a master builder. So it's God's grace that had to be given to Paul for him to become the builder that God required to build the church the way God determined that it would be. You see? So not only does God have the plans for us and have the workers that he's called out, he equips us through his Spirit to accomplish the work that he's given us to do. The work of the ministry is never about the minister. It's not. Except in how well he relies upon the master himself. But it's never a work of who we are. Now, God uses our personalities, yes. Okay? Not everyone teaches like I do, in case you're wondering. So he'll use those things. But not only does he call me and people like me and anybody in here, even those people over there in that nursery that I couldn't even imagine going to. He not only calls you to do that, but he equips you to do the work that he's called you to do. Where else can you find that, man? And that's what he's saying, according to the grace of God, which was given to me. So this originates with God. And God's favor towards Paul on behalf of the church, which Paul says is a building. And because of that, I am the wise and master builder. And all he means by that, this is not arrogance. He's saying there's wisdom in this. Remember, huge difference between knowledge and wisdom. Lots of people have knowledge. What's lacking is wisdom. Wisdom is the ability to put knowledge into practice. Knowing a whole bunch of stuff is irrelevant. It just means you know a whole bunch of stuff. If you never take what you know and put it into practice, then you walk around with a head like this. It's so big, but you can't function. It's when you take that knowledge and you put it into practice that it becomes wisdom. And that's all Paul is saying here. He's not claiming to be something special. He already said it's based on God's grace. I am what God has asked me to be to accomplish the task. He has equipped me, he has enabled me, and therefore I can call myself a wise builder because he's given me, I understand the plans. Now that doesn't mean that Paul wasn't reliant upon God through prayer and fasting and you know, getting advice from other. It's not like he didn't listen to anybody that was around him. So according to the grace of God, which was given to me as a wise master builder, I have laid the foundation. Now he'd already said that before. Well, he said he sowed before. But here's the foundation. Any good building project has to start with the foundation. It has to. Because if you have a shaky foundation, regardless of how well you build or how pretty it may be, it will never stand the troubles that life will throw at it, regardless. It just won't. And it's interesting, when we lived in Belize and we would get teams, in the early days especially, there was much building to do. A lot of what you guys that have been there have seen obviously wasn't there. It was built during our time there and those that came after us and even those that came before us. And so very early on when we were doing certain things, you would, you know, you had to get everything prepared. You had to get all your, you know, your plans, because as Americans, we have to do the plans. Well, we did, because we were building different than the local people. We were going to put up block or whatever. So you can't just throw that stuff up, especially in the rainforest, man. 190 inches of rain a year. If you don't have a good foundation, it ain't standing. It'll get washed out, which, by the way, for those of you that have the big house, Marie and I's house, which we lived in when we were there, the back area that used to be the lunch area for all of the teams that came in, over the years, through the rain, the foundation wasn't right, and the water got underneath there, and it washed all that aside, and so the foundation ends up collapsing, so the whole roof was starting to sag. That bottom there, the top, was the bedroom for our two daughters when we lived there. That was their room above that lunchroom. Well, because of the situation, it was so dangerous when we were just there a couple of months ago. Man, it was kind of frightening getting out there because this thing was sagging big time. And since then, we said, you know what, we got to get this thing off here before it falls down and hurts somebody. The foundation is gone. And so a team came in right after we were there, actually within a couple of weeks, I think. So some of you may have seen it on Facebook. And what that team did was take down that whole back half of our house. They took it all down because there was nothing to be done. And we're hopefully going to rebuild back there, but it's going to start with the foundation. You see, we can't, if we're going to build, we can't let this happen again. We have to build this thing in a way that's going to keep it from crumbling in the future, near future or distant future, either way. So it all starts with the foundation. So we always had teams coming down to Belize, always. And it was amazing how the teams that came down that helped us dig the footings. If you've done any of this, you know what I'm talking about. Well, this is Belize. There's no backhoes. There's no excavators, bobcats. There's none of that stuff. It's all pick and shovel and man. And we would, you know, dig these, you know, whatever 18 inch by 18 inch deep footings that would go along. And then wherever pillars were on the ends and stuff, we would filled a much bigger. That all had to be dug by hand. And it had to be all prepared. Had guys down there teaching us how to level. That's where I learned how to do. Larry, who was a surveyor, he's over there, so he won't know. He's working with the kids. But Donnie, a guy that used to come from Texas, it was the coolest thing. He showed me how to do level using a clear hose by putting water, and you watch the water, and when the water's level on both sides, you got level. And I'm like, dude, that's the coolest thing ever. We don't got to have one of those $10,000 machines to get level. We use a water hose, baby. It was cool. It was the coolest thing. But anyway, but people would come down and they would do that. And of course, it would rain half the time in the midst of this because the rainy season was our summer. And you'd just be muddy, muddy, muddy. We have pictures of our kids. You can't believe how, but it was a blast. What a pain. Anyway, we would get all of this, and all of these teams, you know, they would take all their pictures, what teams always do, and then they would go back to the churches, right? You guys know, because that's what our teams do. And it's funny, when they showed the pictures of their trip to Belize, that everybody's not interested in digging footings. Who cares about the foundation? So I'm serious. Well, what did you guys do there? Well, we put in the footings and the foundation for, you know, whatever, for the sixth grade school building. Well, all I see is a bunch of holes. Well, yeah, but you see, the people that were there understand, but the people that weren't there could care less. It's a hole with mud. You're coming here, we sent you there, and this is what you come back with? Pictures of kids playing around in the mud and digging holes? You see? Yeah, happened all the time. But the teams that came once that footing was poured and stuff, the teams that came down and helped us frame, now they got a response with their pictures because you could see what was going on. There was a visible representation of the work that had been accomplished. It didn't matter all of the blood, sweat, and tears, and blisters, and spiked feet, and all of the rebar, and you know, and all of the stuff that was laid, and all that. Nobody cares. It's just the foundation, man. Yeah? Do you see what Paul is saying here? That's exactly what Paul is saying. We pay so little attention to the foundation because it just does. I mean, after all, we just walk around on it, man. You know, all of this stuff. Who really cares that that pole is standing there, except it's really irritating in church, right, to have to look around it. It's just irritating. Do you know why that thing's there? Because, well, the roof would fall if it wasn't. It plays a significant role. Now, I wished it wasn't there, believe me. But we don't have two guys strong enough to stand on the ends and hold this thing while we're meeting. We don't have a couple of atlases in here. So the poles are going to have to, until we can figure out something else, and the architect guys can figure that out if later on we do that. It's a pole. It's not a big deal. I'm not going to that church because I have to look around the pole. Really? Really? Gee, then maybe you should go somewhere else. Let me give you Bill's number. Yeah, I have no problem with that. It doesn't bother me at all. If you don't want to be here, I'd prefer you weren't here. It's okay with me. Anyways, but that's what's going on. But nobody cares about the foundation. But without the foundation, whatever you do is irrelevant. Because it might look really shiny and pretty, but it will never take the tempests that life will throw at it. You see, it's the foundation that makes the building safe. It's where safety comes in. And though that's, Paul is really talking about the temple here, the concept of the temple, that we're God's spiritual temple being built in this thing. It applies. There was safety there. All in the scripture you can find that they always sort of rallied around the temple because it was the place. Once again, in Belize, we learned our lesson a couple of years into our ministry there. We got hit with a major hurricane, just Hurricane Iris. The ministry was just going really well. We were advancing. I'm doing studies all over teaching leadership, and it was so good. It was just amazing. And then all of a sudden we started getting reports that a hurricane was coming. Hurricanes had hit Belize in the past, but many have missed it. Well, this one, we're tracking it because we live there now, and we live 10 miles inland. For those of you who have been there from PG, which is right on the coast, Punta Gorda. So we know this thing's coming, and it's headed right for PG. I mean, dead center. So we're like, oh my gosh, what are we going to do? So we started making the plans for this because you have a few days, obviously. I literally went down Machaca Road in my truck, that truck out there, and drove up and down the road, and I told all of our Belizean friends, I said, look, this hurricane is coming. And at Machaca, we lived at Machaca at that point, which is way back in the bush. We had two buildings. We had a big gym, sort of looks like this. And on the sides were these block rooms. I'm guessing they were 16 by 16, whatever the case may be. But we had decided that those were probably going to be the safest in the hurricane. So we went to all of the cabins, took all of the foam rubber off the beds, and we put it all on the walls inside those things. We put 5-gallon buckets in there to go to the bathroom. And by the time with our staff, and we even had a team there, over at the school. And I told him, you need to come back here, because if this thing gets bad, we need to be able to get to you guys, or you guys need to get to us. So we brought all of these people back. We put them in those rooms. And we had the whole kitchen area. And I had gone up and down the road, and I told the Belizeans, I said, look, when this thing comes, you know, I didn't say it, but your houses aren't going to take it. They're not going to last. So you come to Machaca. We'll give you safety. And they were, oh, no, Pastor Ricky, with no mini hurricanes. We had never had, and I said, no, we're tracking this one. It's coming straight at us. It's not going to miss us. Well, we would be okay. We would be okay. I said, well, you know, what are you going to do? So I said, look, if it gets bad, you guys know where we are. We want you to come back. So by the time the hurricane got here and the wind started blowing, we were talking about this in our Wednesday night study, 140 mile an hour sustained winds. It was insane. I'm telling you, if you've never experienced this, you can't describe it. It's unbelievable. So what happened was, it's the hurricane's coming, the winds are picking up, all of these huge rainforest trees, and I mean some of them are gigantic, are just literally starting to, like, you could see they're not lasting. Well, we're getting ready to put all the people into these rooms, and none of the Belizeans have come. And I started to worry, you know, because if we're feeling this at Machaca, what must they be feeling in their homes? And I was terrified that we were going to lock ourselves away in safety, and all of our friends from Machaca Road and elsewhere were going to come and not find us there ready to protect them. So I told Marie and the rest of the people, I said, look, I can't go in there. I have to stay out, because if these people come, we need to be able to get them into the building. And so me and Derek and Johnny Weldon, we stayed out and rode the hurricane out, outside, doing stupid things that we shouldn't have done, seeing how we could get out in the wind and how far we could, you know, it was crazy. Usually if wind blows like that, I keep Marie around. She holds me down so the wind doesn't take me. Anyway, why am I saying all that? Because the building, you see, there's safety in that. Trust me, after that, everything that we built at the school, at Machaca, everything is built to be able to handle a huge hurricane. Believe me, we learned our lesson. And those poor people, their homes were just like cards. So we spent months and months and months helping them rebuild. And getting back in our ministry completely changed from what it was. I wasn't able to train any leaders. I had to help these guys get food to their family. So we were using my truck to haul. It was insane. But the building of God, it's a place of safety. If you're a believer in Christ, you understand this. There isn't any safety outside the fellowship in the Lord. There just isn't. You're like those movies that talk about wild animals and how the lions and stuff will chase the pack. And what is the one thing that they're waiting for? The one animal that either lags behind or separates itself from the group. That's the one they go after every single time. So as a Christian, we need each other. Because within the body of Christ, within the building of God, there is safety here. Okay? It just is. There's great safety like that. But again, those buildings down there now are only ultimately safe because when we built them, believe me, the foundations we were putting in before, we doubled them on these buildings. I mean, the footings for the pillars are gigantic, being hand dug. We're talking like 6 by 6 by 40 inches deep on the corners and stuff in the main. That's what's holding it all together. And the footings, instead of being 18 inches now, are 24, you know, 24 deep. Instead of using the small rebar, we used the bigger rebar. I mean, we said, look, we're not letting this happen again. So all of those buildings, you see the foundation. We were using wisdom from experience and saying, look, if we're going to provide safety for those that we love, then we need to do this. We need to get this foundation. Paul says, look, I've laid that foundation. That foundation is Christ. And nobody's interested typically when you're out there and you're ministering the gospel because they don't see a work. Michael Schreck, I've shared this with you before, years in Nepal, before he married Pasang. Years in Nepal, living on the street with the people, learning the language, ministering the gospel to them. Nothing to show for it. Nothing. Actually told me that they had supporters that said, "Well, Michael, what's going on here? How many people have gotten saved?" "Well, no one." "How many of you baptized?" "Well, no one." "Well, Michael, if we don't start seeing some progress here, we're not going to be able to support you." And Michael, like the rest of us have been in that position, said, "I understand. The problem is you don't understand." You see, building, he's out there getting those people prepared for that foundation. The coolest thing I ever heard on the whole sower thing, you know, where the sower sows and some falls among rocks and some on the path and some in the weeds and stuff. And I told Michael before we left, I said, "Look, what do you want me to tell Calvary Chapel Mesquite?" That was early in our days. This was probably, what, 06, maybe? Something like that. I said, "What do you want me to tell them?" When I go back, I said, "We're not going to pull our support from you, Michael. You don't got to worry about that. We understand." He said, "You tell them I'm picking up rocks." That was his reply. And I'm like, you'll have to explain that one to me. Michael's brilliant. For those of you that don't know, this guy's like, wow. He's scary smart. Totally nerd-looking dude, but he's scary smart. Anyway, so he explained that that's in the parable of the sower. The reason there were rocks in that field when he sowed is because they hadn't taken the time to pull the rocks out. The ground's been broken up. I'm now pulling the rocks. You tell him I'm pulling up rocks. I said, "Dude, that's the coolest dang thing I've ever heard. I've used that 1,000 times." That's what he was doing. You see, he was getting it ready and stuff. We could go on and on. But we understood, but others don't. They want to see progress. They want to see growth. They want to see the building going up. We don't care about the foundation. Paul says foundation is pretty significant. I laid that foundation like Michael did. It's Christ. That's it. Notice he doesn't talk about a particular type of theology here. A specific set of doctrine beliefs, doctrinal beliefs. He doesn't do that. No, I laid the foundation. It's Jesus. That's what it is. I laid that foundation. But the foundation's been laid, notice. But let each one take heed to how he builds on it. Did you catch that? Is that written to pastors? No, it's written to you. We're all building on that foundation. We're all building in our lives as we minister within our communities and our neighbors and our friends and our family and blah, 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 and fellowship with one another here and encourage one another. We're all building on that foundation based on what has been built before us. So each one of us need to take heed how he builds on it. And by the way, Paul will say later in this same chapter that what you use to build is going to be put to the test. If you build with wood, hay, and stubble, but if you build with gold and precious